The following recorded information and training does not constitute legal advice. It's always advisable to consult with a lawyer about your case. Therefore, if you want legal advice, please see a lawyer.
The ideas, strategies, and tactics we discuss are of a general nature and have been used successfully by fathers and grandparents around the world, both in and out of family court.
By listening to this training, you are agreeing to the following terms. One, this training is recorded. By participating, you are agreeing to being recorded if you participate live in the training. Two, if you participate in and or listen to the training, you're waiving any and all rights connected to your participation. Three, you are fully and solely responsible under all circumstances for any course of action you take in your family law matter. If you do not agree to these terms, you must end your participation now.
And finally, the results of applying our training suggestions depend entirely upon your ambition, time, commitment, activity, and implementation skills. If you wish more information, please contact us at DivorceDadWeekly.com.
Hi, I'm Danny Gusby, Executive Director of Fathers Resources International.
And I'm Heidi Neighbor, President of the National Shared Parenting Association.
And we're your dynamic divorce duo. Welcome to Divorce Dad Roadmap, Secrets of Holidays and Christmas Series Part 3, How to Prepare for a Happier Holiday Next Year.
Please be sure to download and open the action guide for this special report. It can be either printed or just go right into the PDF action guide that you can download from the webcast page.
So let's begin. We are on page 3, and the quote for this training session is, "Behold the miracles of faith, hope, and charity, but the greatest miracle is love." St. Paul, Letter to the Corinthians.
Well, Danny, you chose this quote. I don't know a whole lot about this stuff. When it comes to the Corinthians, I've certainly heard of them, but I have heard of St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why you chose this quote.
Because I think it really encapsulates the key components of what you need in order to do more than survive nasty family court situations.
Okay.
You have to have absolutely faith that you can get there, that you can make a difference, that you can obtain justice, that you can persuade others to see the sensibleness of what it is that you're suggesting.
Well, faith sort of coincides with the word belief, right?
Yes.
And I think that maybe that's one of the biggest challenges fathers face, because I gather many of the dads that have either had some previous experience or know someone who has had previous experience going through the system, there isn't a lot of belief that they're going to be treated equally or fairly.
Well, I think that is true.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that regardless of what you see going on around you,
mm-hmm.
you have to cultivate a really hopeful spirit.
Right.
Hope is really what I would call the wellspring of faith.
Okay.
If you don't have hope, I don't believe it's possible to have faith.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you do have faith, it's a pretty hard go. You know, you're really probably struggling with it.
Right.
But if you have a hopeful outlook, I think it makes it that much easier to cultivate faith within. You know, it's sort of the same idea as happiness. You know,
mm-hmm.
why do relationships fail? Well, because usually one person is unhappy, or maybe it's both.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You've got to be happy in order to have a successful relationship, but happiness should not really be something that comes from outside of you. I think that's a bonus. Happiness has to be a state that you're in to begin with, and you have to bring that to the table. You know, picture, you're a guy, you go to the bar, and you're the most unhappy person walking the face of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
How successful are you going to be at striking up a conversation with the most beautiful girl in the bar?
Right.
Not going to happen, okay?
Yeah, sure.
Right? I mean, as a woman, how many unhappy guys have you ever met?
Well, quite a few.
Right. Did you find any of them interesting?
No.
How about your girlfriends? Do they have similar sorts of stories?
Sure. I mean, why would you hang out with somebody who's unhappy?
Right. But when you come across somebody with a pleasing personality and a happy...
Well, that's very attractive.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I'm saying, I mean, that's something that you got to bring to the table, OK? okay? You can't really rely on someone to make you happy or things to make you happy, because all of that will be very temporary. You know, you maybe think of when you're a kid, you get a, well, you wouldn't know this, but yeah, because you're a girl. but maybe,
girl.
About, you know, you're getting a G.I. Joe for Christmas when you're a guy.
Yeah, it was never on my Christmas list.
Well, maybe for you it's a Barbie.
Actually, I wasn't a Barbie girl.
Okay, fair enough. Whatever that thing was, you know, and you literally were salivating, waiting to get that thing for your birthday or for Christmas or as a graduation present or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's something, you know, as an adult, you know, getting that first really nice car,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But sooner or later, that feeling wears off. Life begins to encroach and take over.
Sure.
Right? That kind of happiness is only temporary.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the same thing with faith and hope. You have to bring it to the table. You have to cultivate it within yourself. But it's got to be based upon a belief that you can get there. And a lot of that, I think, really comes down to the way you wire your brain. If you program yourself by saying, you know what, I'm screwed.
Guess what, you are.
And everybody keeps telling you, you're screwed. And you read all the stuff on the internet from other father groups, you're screwed. All you're thinking is, I'm screwed.
Yep.
Well, this, I think, is one of the big differences that we find in the live meetings that we conduct here in Southern Ontario, Canada, and Toronto and in Hamilton,
mm-hmm.
is that I'm a big believer that it's my personal mission, since I'm facilitating this meeting, that people have to walk out of that room in a better state than when they, you know,
they walked in.
Yeah. So it's my role to facilitate, you know, hope within them, to give them that encouragement that they can find that hope within themselves.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hear you.
Right. So I think that's an enormous part of getting to your end goal. And then the last part of all this, you know, I often tell guys when they're winning, be charitable, you know, be magnanimous in your win.
Yeah, don't turn the knife.
Yeah, don't turn the knife. Don't twist the knife. You know, ha ha, I got you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just be very humble about it.
Right.
You know, because at the end of the day, what is waging peace all about? It's about love. It's about the love for your kid.
And the truth is, I mean, both Danny and I are adult children of divorce, and we're here to tell you, you know, when we were going through this as kids, we didn't hate either of our parents. We hated what was going on, absolutely.
Yeah.
But we loved Mom and Dad equally.
Sure.
I mean, I could never have chosen between the two. I never understood why my dad left. And for years and years and years, I actually blamed myself as a kid. That obviously I did something that drove him away. And again, that's a five-year-old's analysis. You know, years later when I grew up and started to understand the truth of what really transpired, and you have a better idea of what relationships are like and marriages, you know, in my late teens, early 20s, it started to really dawn on me that really I had nothing to do with my father leaving at all. And you know, you sort of forget the innocence that children have. The one thing that, and I think Danny's dead on this, be charitable when you've won. As much as, you know, your ex may have been throwing all sorts of mud at you to get the upper hand and basically winner-take-all approach, if you've succeeded, be charitable. It makes you a better person. Your children will always acknowledge that more than the opposite, because again, your kids love both of you. And just to end in this quote, Danny, the last line, but the greatest miracle is love, is absolutely true. Love is something that keeps us together and focused on the important things in life. Most parents I've ever met, and I don't care what gender you are, will do absolutely anything for their children. I mean, there's always going to be exceptions to the rule, but I think it's probably less than 1% of all parents that maybe don't fall in that category. Most parents love their children over and above anything and will give up all sorts of things for their children. So, you know, love is certainly the driving force behind all this.
Well, I'm reminded of something that one of my clients has been going through just recently. I'm working with him on one aspect of his case and helping him to improve his communication skills. And, you know, the typical email exchanges or text messages or phone calls that go on between parents who aren't getting along are usually, you know, quite catty and nasty, or there's things in them that are said that aren't necessarily what you would call peacemaking statements.
Right.
They're provocative, or they're inflammatory, or they're baiting, or there's something in them that's like, you know, twisting the knife a little bit.
Right.
And so in his case, his letters were more, I think, a product of exasperation of dealing with an ex-wife that was just still wanting to fight,
mm-hmm.
and then trying to find any kind of wiggle room in something, in any kind of agreement that would give her an advantage that she could lord over this dad.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to say that this dad was some kind of saint, because, you know, nobody is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that there's been some contribution here, either through, you know, his communication skills or maybe even his actions. But, you know, I've said to him, you know what? I said, let's try and deconstruct this and do it a little better. So I help him write his first parenting letter. And that's something that we're actually going to be doing a series on at some point, how to write parenting letters. But anyways, I help him to write this first one. And, of course, Mom, what does she do? She still writes back with something to twist the knife in. And one of the lines that she uses, well, you know, leopards never change their spots, but we can hope in 2010 that, you know, for a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at this, and I almost got hooked into responding to all this.
Mm.
Until finally it dawned on me, and I wrote one line. Let's not hope for a miracle. Let's create one together.
Mm. Well, you know, and that's really what we're talking about here. And I guess in many ways it might in fact be a miracle if you can resolve things. And that should be your goal for the coming year. I mean, we are talking about this, how to prepare your holidays, to make them happy for the coming year, right? And we're doing this to teleseminar webcast at the end of the year. In preparation for the coming year. So what better way to prepare for the coming year but to have all that kind of stuff in place, you know, and be able to ensure that what is talked about in this quote can actually happen. Right, Danny?
That's right.
All right, well, let's move on. I think we've talked about the quote fairly extensively. And let's dive in. First, before we do that, though, a quick reminder. If you haven't downloaded Danny's ebook, Divorce 101, How to Protect Your Children from the Divorce Industry, please be sure to get your copy. Just visit divorceddadminute.com. And there's a sign-up form. Put in your name and email address, and the report is emailed to you. Please be sure to read it every once in a while. There's some great information in there to get you through the highs and lows of what you're going to be battling. All right, Danny, let's move on to page 5. And before we actually get into the top 10 of this, we're going to focus on the main point to remember, and that is that the main step in planning for a happier holiday next year comes down to that you, and only you, can truly fail when you plan. Fail to plan, right?
When you fail to plan,
when you fail to plan, that is when you really, truly can fail.
When you plan to fail.
No, I'm sorry.
That's my plan. I want to plan to fail.
I'm glad we can laugh about this, but clearly, if you're not...
Well, it's not funny for some dads.
If you're not...
Some dads, unfortunately, that's their exact, you know, plan, because they have failed to plan.
Right. The only way to fail is to fail in your planning. In other words, that you're not planning at all, right? You want to make sure you do plan, and that's one way to ensure that you're not going to fail at this. And the more time you have available to do all the planning, the better. And we're about to enter a brand new year. This is an opportunity to learn from us and incorporate a lot of the stuff that we know can actually help you through the next year. So, remember that waging peace is your ultimate game plan, because it's designed to persuade mom and or the family court by setting a better example for the kids, all right? And you have to be persistent about this, and as Danny likes to say, yet formless like water, okay? Remember that water erodes a beach, shapes rocks on the shore and glass. Remember, you could have a piece of glass from
from
a broken bottle or something.
It makes it smooth.
And over time, it becomes smooth on all the edges and kind of looks like a jewel. I remember picking those up as a kid when I would, you know, be beachcombing. And that, again, that water also washes up onto the shore and no longer belongs to the sea at that time or the lake. Your efforts have to be in a similar, gentle, yet persistent approach. Let's face it. There are waves that come in all the time from the lake or the ocean. So it's persistent. It can be gentle. It can be, you know, very heavy. So there's different levels. But every obstacle that you're going to come up against, you have to be able to find a way to yield over that over time. And you have 365 days to wage peace in the coming year. So begin your campaign today.
So before we begin on page 6, I just want to remind everybody on page 7, there is a sheet there for you to be able to take notes as we go along. So if you have a thought that occurs to you as we're going through these points, you know, feel free to jot them down into your action guide.
Yep.
That's what it's for, so you can take action. So we're on page 6, and the first of our holiday tips are, number 1, yes, we can. Be like your child. And the success solution implementation is, children rarely give up when they really want something, even when it seems impossible. And we really believe that that's a strategy worth implementing. Heidi?
Oh, without question, Danny. Just think about any time your child has focused in on something they really want, like it's a hot summer day and they want an ice cream, and they're not budging. They definitely want an ice cream, and even though it's dinner time, they want the ice cream first. Or alternately, it's a holiday coming up or a birthday coming up, and they're really clear on what they want for their birthday or for the holiday. Or that they just want cookies and milk right after school. You know, kids are incredibly persistent at getting what they want, depending on, of course, what it is. But it's one of those things where, you know, as simple as it may seem to you, take a look at the strategies that they're actually using to get you to give them what they want. And start looking, analyzing it, and finding a way to incorporate that same thinking, that same persistence into the things that you want. It's pretty powerful.
We're at number 2. That which you measure improves. And the success solution implementation is if you don't have realistic, immediate, medium, and long-range goals that also measure your progress, you don't have a plan.
So, Danny, you're going to have to explain this.
Well, if you don't have a goal, you don't have a plan. If you don't have something to strive for, you don't have a plan. If you don't know
where
you are...
Well, you don't have the ability to put a plan together if you don't have a goal.
Right. But that's the whole purpose of a plan to begin with, okay?
So you have to figure out what's your goal first. And as crazy as it may seem initially, right, I'm going to point to you, Danny, because you had a goal when you knew your marriage was over. And as crazy as the goal was, what was your goal at that time?
I'm not leaving.
Okay.
I'm not leaving.
So at the time, your wife didn't work. She was a stay-at-home mom.
That's correct.
You worked night shift.
Yep.
Not exactly the best time when you can get a babysitter.
Nope.
Right? And
actually, I worked continental shifts. I worked from afternoons to midnights to days, rotating, okay?
Oh, so it wasn't
seven
always...
on, two off, four on, three off. Crazy, okay?
Okay. So really, from the outside looking in, you'd think, well, there's no way you're going to end up with the kids. You've got this job, and she's not working.
There was no way when I looked at it at first, but I didn't care. Right?
But you said, I'm not leaving. And that was final, right? I mean, you weren't going to budge on that at all.
Well, the other part of it was neither of the kids, okay?
Right.
So there was those two things. I just said, you know what? I don't know how. Doesn't matter that I don't know how. All I know is I'm not leaving, and neither are those kids. She's the one who's unhappy. She's leaving.
Okay. And so without going into too much detail, let's look at the end result, Danny. At the end of, what, a year or two,
yep.
Not only had you not left, neither had the kids.
That's correct.
You were able to stay in the home that you were living in.
Yes.
Your wife and soon-to-be ex left.
Yes.
Left both kids with you.
Yes.
Your stepson and your daughter.
Correct.
Which eventually led to you gaining custody of both kids.
That's correct.
And she became the one-night-a-week parent because she didn't want the weekends.
That's correct.
Did you ever, like, shake your head and wonder, how did this happen?
No, I was too busy moving on to my next goal. You see, that's the way I've always been. That's it's really weird for me in some aspects. Some people ask me, well, how do you do these things that you do?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really think about it too deeply as to how I do them. I'm more interested in is what is it that I want to do?
And you focus on...
And I focus on the target.
Right.
And then as I'm going along in the journey, it's anything that I see or anything that occurs to me that I could do that would support that, I just begin doing it.
Right.
And sometimes, I mean, some of the things that I've done in the course of my life, you know, you look at it from the outside, you go, you're crazy. What are you doing that for?
Right.
You're taking a big chance or you're taking a lot of risks. But you know what? You only have one life to live.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can either live it or you can watch it from the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not interested in watching my life from the sidelines. I'm interested in living it to the fullest that I can.
Right.
You know, I can tell you the first 30 years of my life were not easy.
Mm.
Not easy at all.
Mm.
Not at all, at all, at all. But at a certain point, I think I hit a tipping point, whereas it wasn't necessarily that things became easier. It's just I think I got better at implementing the things that I was, you know, that I had in mind that I wanted as goals. Becoming a father, I think a lot of men would probably agree with this. It's such a life-changing event that, for me, it gave me all the motivation that I needed in order to achieve that goal.
Mm-hmm.
There was no other possible conclusion.
So, again, we're talking about... preparation tip number two, which
yeah.
means you got to measure what's going on in order to, you know, notice that you're improving
mm-hmm.
or notice your progress.
Yes.
Now, what if things are going downhill?
Stop doing whatever it is you're doing and do something different.
Okay.
If you're not moving in the direction that you need to be moving in, you're doing something wrong. If you're going backwards, stop. Just stop everything that you're doing. You know, take a deep breath and go, what can I do different? What's the first immediate thing I can do different?
So if you are measuring this, if you're aware of the goal that you have and you're constantly looking, am I moving towards the goal or am I moving away from the goal and getting into, you know, dangerous territory, if you're constantly looking at it, that is your way of measuring it. And you can then tell very quickly, man, oh, man, I'm going the wrong way here. I got to rethink this.
Right. Now, I mean, I can't guarantee that this strategy is going to work 100% of the time.
Right.
Because it's not worked 100% of the time for me. And
right.
I don't think any strategy works 100% of the time exactly because there's just too many variables. But I've found consistently this, is that more often than not, it does. I would, for myself personally, when I followed this strategy, I would say that I have a 90% success rate in my own life, you know, the things that I can control.
Now, Danny, you had a very interesting occurrence in a recent live meeting in Toronto, and that was, I remember you told me about this afterwards, that you had asked the question to the whole room, all the guys in the room, what do you want?
Yeah.
All right.
I ask this every 6 months or so because the room begins to change and shift.
Right. And basically, by asking a question like that, you're also asking, in a sense, what are your goals?
Right.
Or what is your primary goal? And out of a room of, what, 35, 40 guys, how many hands did you have going up? When
three.
You...
The question was, who wants to win? It was a simple question. Who wants,
who
to, win?
Wants to win?
Who wants
you,
to win?
And you had three hands
three
come
hands,
up.
Three hands go up out of, I think, there were 30 people there that night.
So the 27 that didn't put their hands up.
They were all looking at one another to see who was going to stick their hand up or not stick their hand up. They were all hesitating. They were all waiting for someone else to put their
hand
up.
So are they afraid to, do you think that the fear is that you don't want to focus on a goal like that?
One guy said to me, well, what's the definition of winning? And I said, who cares? What's your definition of winning?
Right.
I don't care, you know, who cares? Do you have a definition of winning? He says, yeah. I said, so?
Do you want to win?
Do you want it or not?
Right. Do you want your definition? Because, I mean, there's going to be several different types of definitions.
You know, and I said, don't worry. I said, I'm going to define what winning is,
mm-hmm.
right? But first I want to know, do you want it?
Right.
Right? So, you know, I shook my head and I said, you know, some of you here come to this room week after week after week after week, and I say, you know, well, you just come here to listen to me blab on,
mm-hmm.
right? You're, you know, I'm not like penicillin, you know, that you come in and you get your weekly hit.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to take what it is that I'm teaching you
and incorporate.
You got to apply it, you know, as quickly as you possibly can.
Doesn't that sort of speak to the whole idea that you know, maybe what goes on when you're going through this process, that this is like the last thing you're going to think of, that you have to focus on a goal?
Well, I next mentioned, I said, well, you see, this is a proof just of how abused each and every one of you are. You didn't stick up your hand. You don't even believe you can win, or let alone deserve to win.
Or that you should even be asking to win.
Or that you need someone else's permission to win. Because they were all looking around at one another.
Wow.
So I tried it again, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, everybody put your hands down. After I explained all that, I said, so, who wants to win?
Right.
How many hands do you think I got?
I don't know.
Six.
Okay, so it doubled.
It doubled.
That's good.
But come on, that's 24 people in the room who still are not sure.
They're not sure they want to win.
And finally, I got mad and I banged my fist on the table. I said, well, am I wasting my time here? It takes me sometimes 2 hours to get here for this meeting. What am I doing here if only six people out of 30 want to win?
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Ultimately.
So.
Ultimately, after going through this exercise two or three times,
mm-hmm.
two or three more times, finally almost two-thirds of the room. The others still weren't sure or clear, or they were new or they were shy or whatever.
Right.
And I said, well, now let me define winning. You know, peace for your child, which means automatically you're going to get peace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to worry about you getting peace. You just get peace for your child, and as a result, you get peace.
So did you have the whole room with their hands up?
Everybody kind of looked at one, wow, okay. I mean, yeah, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm. So, again, it all comes down to what are you focusing on? What is it that you're thinking about in terms of your goals? Your goals are going to determine your direction. And again, without measuring or being aware of whether you're going in the right direction towards your goals, measuring whether you are progressing, you don't have a plan. Without a goal, you don't even have the beginnings of a direction to work on a plan.
That's right.
So, you know, as trivial as this may seem to you, this is so fundamental that without this, you're going to be treading water, really, and going nowhere. It's the difference between treading water and actually saying, you know what, there's an island over there, I'm going to swim towards that, as opposed to treading water. If you're going to just sit there and tread water, you're never going to reach land, if that's your goal.
Right.
All right, let's move on. Number three. Take time to get away from your problems and the success solution. Doing the same things which don't improve your situation is a sign that you need a fresh approach. Take some time off. You know, Danny, that's really good advice. We sort of touched on this a little bit because I said to you, you know, in number two, you're saying, you know, make sure you measure the direction you're going in so you can see the improvement. But it could go the other way, too. And you're saying when things are going the wrong way, stop what you're doing, right? Is this the time to take time off?
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes you have to do something different in order to get a better perspective. Like, I'll just give you an easy example to understand. I'm a very ambitious guy when it comes to working with my clients and putting their materials together for them. You know, when, you know, we're working with the lawyers and so on and so forth,
mm-hmm.
In order to get these things into the kind of shape that they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you can be so close to it. You can spend hours and hours and hours or days and days and days and days and days on something.
And you don't see it anymore.
That you kind of lose sight of where it is that you're going with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or that you know, it's like that thing that's on the tip of your tongue, but you can't get it out.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Well, it's the tip of your nose.
You're trying to figure out a way to say something with more clarity or something,
mm-hmm.
and it's not coming.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what it is that you want to say. You're just not saying it as clearly as needs to be said or as succinctly.
And, you know, Danny, this is actually not an uncommon strategy. I remember when I was attending art school many, many years ago when I was training to become a graphic designer. And, you know, we would be handed a project to design, a poster and some advertisements for, let's say, a show that's going to be launching at the museum. That was the assignment, right?
Yes.
And you do all sorts of research on what the show is going to be and look for images and all this other stuff. And one of the things that I learned, and this is so true with what you're talking about, you know, I immerse myself in the information to get all the pieces together and start, you know, coming up with some ideas and so on. And then I hit sort of critical mass when I just couldn't do it anymore. Or I was just coming up with the same ideas over and over again, and I kind of got to that point where I couldn't come up with anything fresh anymore. So it was time to go and do something completely different, like go to a movie, go for a swim, or, you know, do something completely, absolutely opposite to what I was doing.
Right.
In other words, give your brain a vacation.
Yes.
Right? And think about something else. And oftentimes within a day or two, it would just come to me on what I needed to do for the assignment.
Right.
And, you know, that same clarity comes with whatever the problem is, whatever the goal is. If you are getting cloudy in your thinking, it's time to let the clouds dissipate and give your brain a rest so that it can work on its own. And it really does work. It's an amazing tool to go and do something else.
I often tell fathers you need to take two steps back,
mm-hmm.
you know, from your problem in order to be able to see it better.
Right.
And that falls in line with all this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You need to sometimes just take a little bit of time off from the problem in order to gain enough of a fresh perspective so that you can actually see something that you didn't see before, which helps to clarify everything.
Well, let's face it, nobody wants to deal with this 24/7 either. I mean, that's no way to live.
Well, nobody does, but you know what? You do see some fathers that are so overwrought by what's going on that
they can't turn it off.
They can't turn it off.
Yeah.
We're at number four. Develop a new tactic every week. To optimize your chances of success, split, test, observe, and tweak your current solutions against new ideas.
All right. So what do you mean develop a new tactic?
Well, I think that if you keep doing the same things again and again and again, you may not necessarily find a way to improve.
Okay, so where do you get the tactics, though? I mean, you can listen to these webcasts. There's all sorts of training that we've developed that could certainly add to your tactic ability.
There's a boatload of free stuff on the fathers-resources.com site, okay, that's not jurisdiction-specific. You know, if you listen to example for the 12 hours of Dadcast.
Or Divorce Dad Minute, which is a one-minute podcast.
Right.
But there's also books that you recommend, Danny, and this is really just the tip of the iceberg. You can look at, read Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People,
yep.
Right? There's some great tactics there.
Jerry Spence
is another...
How to Argue and Win Every Time.
Very famous lawyer from the U.S. that's written several books, and that's just one of them, right, Danny? The How to Win and Argue Every Time. Start to looking at different types of mediation books. There's podcasts. Is it the Harvard?
The Harvard Law Negotiation Project. Getting to Yes.
Getting to Yes. And I know that they also have podcasts that you can listen to on mediation. It gives you some great ideas on negotiation strategies and so on. And again, it gives you a totally different perspective. It may not be related specifically to family situations, you may be able to find a parallel that you can draw from.
I've said this often. When you run out of ideas, that's it. You're dead in the water.
Right.
So this is what the whole concept here is about, you know, developing a new tactic every week is exposing yourself to new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And then to optimize. You know, what if what you're doing is working and you're heading in the direction, then the next goal is to say, okay, can we speed up the process at all? And sometimes you just take one element out, you know, of what it is that you're doing and try to do it differently. And what a split test is typically in marketing.
Mm.
They will split test, you know, like headlines in an advertisement to see which advertisement gets them more sales.
Which headline? The headline may be slightly different.
Yeah.
Not same concept, but just the way it's written is a little
bit
different.
Well, here, I'll give you an example. Things go better with Coke.
Mm.
Okay. Life is wonderful with Coke.
But Danny,
those would be two different examples of two different headlines. Okay?
Yeah, but let's actually put this to the test and let's have a look at what could you possibly split test with communication with your ex. Let's have a look at a couple different examples here. What could you split test?
Listening versus talking.
Listening versus talking. So if you're naturally a talker.
See if you listen, do you get a more effective result?
So if you normally would just dive in and start talking to your ex about the coming weekend and your axis is coming up, blah, 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 can I pick up the kid at 3 o'clock? And she's saying, no, 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 it's not going to work this weekend, or, you know, 3 o'clock doesn't work. What do you do? Do you listen and say, well, why?
No. When I'm saying talking versus listening,
mm-hmm.
this would be a general concept. Some people are more talkative, and the phone call always ends up in some kind of fight.
Right.
Let's say.
Okay.
So, and you've recognized, well, you know, I did the majority of the talking during the phone call, but it ended up in a fight. If I let her blab on.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe she's not blabbing on, but maybe that's how you feel about it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe she actually is. Who knows?
Right.
Does that change anything? Do things get better or do they get worse? That's the only criteria. Does it get better or does it get worse?
Mm-hmm.
Is it better, worse, or is it just the same?
Right.
Well, if it's just the same, you know, just because you did it once doesn't necessarily mean that it's statistically valid. If you split test that, you know, like 50 times, you know, 50 times you've listened and 50 times you've talked, and, you know, you've been looking at those results, you actually have sat down and you got a little checklist beside you, right? You know, fight, no fight, right?
So you keep track of it.
You keep track of it and go, well, you know what? Out of 100 times,
mm-hmm.
and 50 times I talked and 50 times I listened, and it looks like, you know, listening had the majority of times no fight, that's the winner.
Right.
So you've just improved, you've just found a strategy to improve your situation. So then you come up with another idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, listening versus writing, for example. Right.
Yeah. Oh, is sending email better than getting on the phone?
Right.
Or texting, is that better?
Well, whatever it is.
Right.
Whatever it is that's going on, is there a different way that I could do what it is that I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
in order to try and get the result that I'm trying to get,
mm-hmm.
and testing them up against one another in order to figure out how to optimize the situation?
Mm-hmm. I got you. Okay. So, I mean, there's many different ways and places you can get your tactic ideas from, right?
That's correct.
And we've just given you several to look for.
Right.
And again, you need to make sure that you're also keeping track of what's working and what's not.
Well, that's the whole idea, right? First, you split test.
Mm-hmm.
You observe, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Part of the observation is tracking the results, okay?
Right.
And then tweaking, meaning, okay, I found a winner.
Right, and
okay?
Then just trying to improve on that.
Then you've got a winner. That becomes what's known as, in marketing, they call that the control piece.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the one to beat.
Right.
And you don't change
that's the one you want to improve on.
That's the one you want to improve on. So you don't change it until you find something that beats it.
That makes it better.
And when you find a thing that makes it better, that becomes the new control piece to compete against.
Mm.
Okay, and that's how you begin improving.
All right.
Okay.
Let's move on to number 5.
Okay.
Accept that you may need family court. and the success solution implementation. Don't procrastinate. If you've had holiday problems, focus on solutions immediately, do your homework, and proceed. So, Danny, do you think a lot of guys will shy away from family court? Because
nobody wants to go to family court. nobody wants to go to family court if they don't have to. And people will do a lot of times everything they can to avoid going there. But
sometimes,
you just there's no other solution.
But, Danny, sometimes that is better initially, right? Try and negotiate, try and mediate. But you're saying, obviously, if you're hitting a brick wall every step of the way, you've tried a different tactic every week.
Well, how far, how deep, how wide? You want joint custody or shared parenting, or you want sole custody, okay?
Right.
And your wife says no way she wants sole custody. You really think that you're going to mediate or negotiate that?
No, probably not.
Your negotiation is going to be with the judge, not
yeah.
with her. Okay?
Right.
When you're that diametrically opposed, so I mean, you got to be somewhat practical and realistic about what's achievable through negotiation and mediation. I'm a big believer in them. I think absolutely you should use them if you can see that there's a result that's going to happen that you can live with.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not realistic about all this, you could spend a whole bunch of money on those things,
mm-hmm.
not get the result, and still have to go to family court.
Right.
Then what?
Yeah,
right?
I got you.
So all I'm saying in this is be practical.
Mm-hmm.
Be practical. Don't bet the farm on something that is less than a sure thing.
Right. Okay. And, again, you want to do your homework about all the information that you're going to need to gather regarding the holiday problem that you had.
That's correct.
Focus on what the solutions could be.
Yes.
I mean, one of the most obvious ones is plan ahead this time.
Right.
If this was, you thought, oh, everything's going to be working out fine because you had a discussion, it's always a good idea if you've had a discussion, you've had a verbal conversation, follow it up in writing. You know, thanks, ex-wife. I mean, obviously you would never write it that way, but thanks for confirming that, you know, I can pick up a little Johnny on such and such a date for the holidays.
Right.
And, you know, I really appreciate having little Johnny for that time period, and so on, right? Confirm the conversation. If it's just verbal and you've got nothing in writing, you know, and then, you know, it's a week before the day you're going to pick them up, and all of a sudden, you know, you say, oh, I just want to confirm, or, by the way, I just picked up his present and just want to say I'm real excited about picking him up on Friday, and now your ex says, well, you're not getting them on Friday. No, that's not going to happen. Well, all of a sudden, it's like, what? You know, and you're down to the wire.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this does happen. All right, let's move on to number 6.
Talk with Mom. Ask how it can be better. If possible, review the holidays with Mom and ask her if she thinks the schedule can be improved. Ask for suggestions.
Now, that's assuming you can talk to your ex, Danny.
You know what? Do it even if you can't.
All right, so if you can't physically talk to her, right, talk to her on the phone.
Well, the only reason you wouldn't be able to contact her is if there was some kind of restraining order. I mean, there's going to be things that if you're in a really extreme situation that you've got restraining orders or terms of recognizance or a bail condition that have a no contact except between lawyers, you know, you got to obey that.
Right.
But that's not the majority of people in these situations.
Even if there was a no-contact order between you and your ex, could you at least contact her lawyer?
Sure.
Okay. Now, could you contact her lawyer? Or if you have a lawyer, the only way you
can
contact...
If you're represented, then your lawyer has to deal with it.
Right.
If you're representing yourself, then you deal with it.
Okay. Okay, so assuming that you don't have a restraining order or no contact order in place, but your ex just doesn't want to talk to you on the phone.
Right.
What are some of your other options? Write a letter, send an email, send a text. I mean, with a text, you can't really go into any detail. What would you suggest?
I think all of those are good suggestions.
Okay. And part of this is to not be negative in the email or however you're going to contact her.
Be businesslike, but don't be so formal that, you know, dear Mrs. Ex-wife.
Right.
You shall.
Right.
Do the following on this day because I will require.
we're going to have some really good examples of what not to do in some
right.
of the future.
So whatever
training.
You do, don't write notes like that.
Yeah.
That's the quickest way to getting shot right in the head, right
yeah.
between the eyeballs by the judge.
Yeah, you don't. You're not a lawyer,
yeah.
and you shouldn't be writing.
Well, it's like if your ex's name is Susan. Susan, it was good talking to you last week. I'll be picking up the kids 6 o'clock on Friday. I'd appreciate it if you could remember to make sure that they have their swimsuits, as we will be going swimming on Saturday.
Mm.
Tom.
Mm. Right.
Nothing wrong with that.
Now, again, you're asking Mom if she thought the holidays went well.
Right.
What did she think of the schedule? And does she have any suggestions on how to improve the schedule?
Right.
And is it as simple as that? You know, I know little Johnny had a great time at my house. He told me he had a great time at your house. What can we do next year to improve
Here.
The situation?
Susan, Tommy had a great time at my house and a great time at your house over Christmas. I know so because he told me all about, you know, and then some examples of dinner or whatever.
Right.
That he had a lot of fun with. You know, however, he did say a couple of things that he was unhappy about, and I'm sure there are some things he was unhappy about here, because that's just the way, you know, it is in life. And I'm just wondering, is there anything that we can do to make things easier for, you know, our kid? Because I'm sure the greatest gift we could give our kid is to be together, but that's not going to happen.
Hmm.
Right? Is there something that we could do? You know, if I was to invite you to join us for lunch next Saturday during my time with Johnny, would you come?
Hmm.
Tom.
Yeah, okay.
Right? See, I mean, that could be a very short.
And I will bring my girlfriend.
Well, you could put that P.S. I won't bring my girlfriend, but I think that's kind of asking for it myself.
Right.
And I wouldn't go there, right?
Yeah, but, you don't want to bring your girlfriend.
Think you want to bring your girlfriend, but you don't want to bring your girlfriend into the conversation at all, right?
No. And likewise, you would hope that Mom would respect the same thing at the other end.
Well, she writes back and calls you a jerk and whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You've tried.
Right.
And the whole idea of waging peace is either the person reciprocates or you prove that they're being a jerk.
Right. Now, let's move on to number 7.
Yes.
This is one of my favorite ones. And preparing for the next holiday, don't get hung up on the calendar and the success solution implementation. Plan to celebrate the holiday early, before the actual date. Kids are excited to open presents early, and so should you. Now, you know, we could be talking about birthdays. We could be talking about certainly Christmas, Hanukkah, any type of holiday celebration, religious holiday. It could be Easter.
Yes.
Other types of celebrations that I can't think of right now. But similar type of stuff where families would get together. And not in all cases, you don't always exchange gifts. I was brought up Catholic, so, you know, at Easter time, there would always be an Easter hunt where they would, you know, hide eggs, which were usually chocolate.
You know,
chocolate.
I never went on any of those egg hunting adventures, right?
They were lots of fun as a kid. But, you know, I'll give you an example. When we celebrated Christmas this year with our family, it wasn't until the 27th of December. And I still had stockings hanging, and even though kids are grown and adults today, I still put little things in the stockings, and we had a little ritual for them to go and empty the stockings. And it was a fun little thing that we did. And that was partly tradition. But, Danny, when the kids were a lot younger, we used to have them celebrate Christmas about a week before the day.
Right.
If we didn't have them. For the Christmas holiday. And again, you know, show me a kid who doesn't want to open presents early. And, you know, that's a kid that's crazy in my books, right?
Yeah.
I mean, no child would say no to that.
Right.
And likewise with birthdays. Now, where it gets a little dicey are things like events that only happen once, and that's maybe a graduation at school, or a summer concert, or a winter concert at school. These are, you know, events that obviously, if you can both go and be peaceful, even if you have to be at opposite ends of the room, it's really important to the child that both of you are there.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, things happen, and you know, the school's been advised that you shouldn't come, or whatever the case may be.
Right.
It can get a little on the ugly side, and there are some strategies for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Danny, what would you recommend in a situation like that if the school is telling you, oh, you know what, you're not welcome to come to the spring concert? What would you do?
I would be very surprised if a school would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would be surprised if a school would do
really
that.
Really?
Because that opens them up to some kind of potential lawsuit, you know?
Really, the only way you could, you know, fall under that category would be if there was a no-contact order.
Right. If mom came to the school with a no-contact order, then they would say something.
They'd have to abide by that.
Right. But no, I would. Most schools don't want anything to do with any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be involved in any way, shape, or form.
Right. So, you know, for those events that you can't have any control over, because, again, you can celebrate a birthday days beforehand. You can just pretend with your child.
Yes.
Hey, it's your birthday. Yeah, I know it's next week, but you know what? Let's pretend that it's today, because I'm not going to see you on your birthday. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I've never seen a kid get angry by getting a present early.
And you know what? If it doesn't happen, if you can't see your kid a week before their birthday or a few days before, then you know what? Make sure that you can at least call them, email them, text them, whatever way that you can. Send them a voicemail if they have a cell phone. Then celebrate afterwards and just say, you know, I'm thinking about you today. I know it's your birthday today. I've got a big surprise when I do see you, and I'm so looking forward to seeing you when we can celebrate your birthday.
Right.
Right? So, again, don't get hung up on the calendar. All right?
So we're at number 8, check with the kids. How are they doing? And the success solution implementation strategy is, without interrogating your children, ask them how the holidays were for them, and maybe you'll find out they were just great.
Well, this is really going to depend on many different things, Danny. A lot of kids end up walking on eggshells. They're afraid to tell one parent how they feel because the other parent may interrogate them when they get back. What did you tell Dad? Or what did you tell Mom? Or, you know, don't do that to your kid. You know, just be with them. Make them feel safe and comfortable when they're with you. That's probably one of the greatest gifts you could give them. I remember as a kid that I was always afraid to ask about my dad because it would upset my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever it did come up in conversation, I regretted it. So, you know, I would always kick myself if it did come up in conversation because then I never heard the end of it. And it wasn't a conversation I wanted to hear at all, because there were no winners in this. I was the biggest loser out of the whole scenario because I didn't have my dad in my life. And, you know, as a kid, you have no control over any of this stuff. You know, you're part of the family, and you're basically told what to do, and that's the way things are.
Well, that's the whole bit about don't interrogate, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't interrogate the kid. You know, just ask the question.
Yeah.
Just check in with your kids. So how was your Christmas?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, every time, you know, for years and years and years, even today I still ask the kids, you know, when mm-hmm. I don't see them on Christmas Day, I say, well, so how'd it go? Did you have a good time?
Yeah.
Right? I don't, like, want to find out all the nasty details of what didn't work.
Right.
Over time,
they're comfortable with just telling you whatever they want to tell you.
Right.
And the truth is, it's not something you would ever come back and, you know, tell your ex, oh, I heard you really messed up on Christmas. Or I heard you really messed up on the birthday celebration, you know, or whatever the case may be. I mean, this is something you want to keep to yourself. Now, Danny, if there's information that you have,
yes,
that came from the kids,
yes,
is this and it was negative,
right?
Is this something you would use in your documentation?
Probably not, unless it was something of real significance, because I think you can go overboard.
So if
not every detail is significant, okay. You know, so part of it is, when you're dealing with situations, is to recognize, you know, what's the small stuff, you know, and don't sweat it,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not worth it.
Obviously,
focus on the big stuff.
Obviously, if mom or mom's boyfriend was drinking and driving, that's serious.
That's not small stuff.
No.
Trust me, in 90% of cases, it's all small stuff. Okay?
Right.
It is.
Yeah.
There are those cases, though, where there's so much, you know, big stuff going on, consequential stuff going on, sometimes it's hard to get a handle on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, again, as you're saying, don't sweat the small stuff. Ask the kids, honestly, you know, did you have a good time?
Right.
And is there something wrong in asking them, how can I make this better for you next year?
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that at
nothing
all.
Nothing wrong with that at all.
And, you know, listen to what they have to say, and obviously the older they get, the more they're going to have to say, and the more articulate they're going to be.
That's correct. You got it.
All right.
So we're at number 9, check with mom. How is she doing? And the success solution implementation strategy is, if it was your turn for the holidays, ask mom how the holidays were for her and thank her for making yours great.
That's the charity end of things, right?
Yes.
Being magnanimous and showing that, in a way, in having a discussion like this, you're basically letting your guard down and thanking your ex for being grateful for the chance that you had this year.
Well, I often tell dads, you know, with the kids, you know, go get a present for mom with the kid from both of you.
Right.
Regardless that you've split up. Just do it.
And again, if mom has been really magnanimous and let you have the child this year for the big holiday,
be grateful.
Then thank her for that. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's something really wonderful about opening up that door. Because, you know, when you're going through the separation and divorce stuff, it's all negative. It's all negative. If you can open up a door to a positive, that's just a great way to, you know, start a new year and start a new method of communication and negotiation for future events.
So, we're in the home stretch, number 10. Consider volunteering with the children. Holidays are sad times for the less fortunate. Volunteering with the kids will teach them how lucky they really are.
You know, Danny, this is really a great closer on this top 10 series, because I think a lot of kids often think, oh, you know, they feel sorry for themselves. Some of them do when they're going through this process, right? And rightly so. I mean, it's a sad time if mom and dad aren't together for the birthday that's coming up, or it might be the first birthday that they've had to choose which house they're going to be at. It's a very sad time for kids. When you volunteer, either at a food bank or a soup kitchen or maybe even at a hospital where kids are sick, you know, you get a sense of just how lucky you are and how grateful you should be. You know, there's something very special about that.
Yes.
So, you know, volunteering is a pretty profound way of getting a clear idea of just what's there, what you already have, even though right now you're not feeling like you have much because you've lost your family. It really does give you a sense of a different perspective, right?
Right.
And there's no greater gift than giving back. And I think a lot of kids, especially during the December holidays, you'll see lots of news stories about this concept of volunteering and giving back. And it really does give kids a better sense of what they should focus on. And it's a great way to get them thinking past what's going on in their lives.
You bet.
All right. So let's move on. Hope you guys got some great notes on page 7 from what we covered here. And let's move on to page 8. And this is the Parenting Diary. Great little tool. It's an organizing tool that you can use for a lot of the stuff that we talked about tonight. Danny?
It certainly is.
It's $49.95 U.S. If you're interested in purchasing one, there's a great review that we got here from Diana Shepherd from Divorce Magazine. It has many different components to it where you can keep a log of, your phone calls, the activities that you and your child are doing, certainly an extensive activities list. There's lots and lots of forms in this parenting diary that will help you put together many different aspects that you can incorporate into your documentation, or it's a great way to put together some sort of a co-parenting plan with your ex. Again, $49.95 U.S. If you're interested in purchasing one, just go to theparentingdiary.com. So let's go on to page 9 and action steps for today. So, number 1, sort out which holiday preparation tip is the first one that you want to complete for this series, for this coming year. Make a list of what are the holidays that are coming up for the entire year, and then backtrack 2 to 3 months prior to that holiday, whatever it is, a birthday, anniversary, summer holidays, spring holidays. Start listing them. Danny?
Then determine how to incorporate the success solutions into your holiday plan. So consider what we've been talking about during this training and ask yourself the question, what could I immediately apply and incorporate into my plan to improve the holidays?
And again, your plan has to be based on your goals. All right, that's the first step. So the final step, really, in your action steps for today is create your future holiday preparation plan now. And the whole key here is the future that you are pre-planning now, and that's going to give you the edge over and above what happened this past year. Danny?
So that concludes our training session for this installment of the Divorced Dad Roadmap, Secrets of Holidays and Christmas Series, Part 3, How to Prepare for a Happier Holiday Next Year. Thank you so much for joining us. We wish you every success with your challenges. Stay strong and remain focused on your goals. Refuse to be baited by anyone. And remember,
the most important job you'll ever have
is to be a dad.
Thanks so much for listening.